just so that you don't feel like you're saying everything about you and you don't know anything about me. Yeah. But the intent is to launch with the first two podcast episodes being my story. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was, in February of 2022, my then husband got a career leapfrog opportunity to be the chief supply chain officer for Napa in Atlanta. Had never even visited Atlanta, let alone had any friends there. So we moved from, he and I met at Walmart. Uh-huh. We moved from Bentonville, Arkansas, where we were there for 15 years, wow, from Arkansas to Atlanta. And I was up for an adventure, like, okay, let's do this. At the time, also, a couple of years prior, I had gotten really into health and wellness. And so I went through several programs to become a national board certified health and wellness coach. Mm-hmm. So I was coaching clients all over the U.S. virtually, while at the same time had my marketing career. With the relocation to Atlanta, the company I was with couldn't accommodate that relocation, like with remote work. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, this is great. I can work with clients all over the U.S. as a health coach. I kind of want to press the gas pedal on this anyway. The flexibility aligns with my husband's career pursuits. We had talked about, and this was kind of the first step in a plan for him to become CEO somewhere, right, which requires just moving to where that next big opportunity is. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know how long we were going to be in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He had a non-compete with Walmart, so that kind of limited our options. But like Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan till you get punched in the face.
Right. Yeah.
So we moved to Atlanta in February 2022. In September of 2022, we were in Nashville visiting his daughter and had a blow-up fight in the hotel room. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, he's throwing a glass on the hotel patio saying he's unhappy, he's been unhappy, I'm unappreciative, I just swiped the credit card, like all these things. Right. And I have no idea where this is coming from.
Yeah.
And so from September, October, it even into mid-November, it was like red light, green light, mm-hmm, where he's saying we're no longer compatible, I've lost my corporate ambition, you know, all these reasons.
Right.
And they just, one, I'm carrying around so much guilt, like, oh my gosh, if I hadn't left Sam's Club to go to Nevco, to then become a health coach, would I still be married?
Right.
Just carrying around all this guilt for these reasons that he's saying all combined amount to wanting a divorce. Mm-hmm. And they just don't seem strong enough,
right,
to ruin a 10-year marriage, a 15-year relationship.
Right.
So it was about mid-November of 2022. He was back in Arkansas visiting some friends, and I called him, and I'm just like, where's your head at? Because we would be like intimate one night, mm-hmm, and then the next day he's like, I just see us as friends. And then he's moving out, saying he's staying at an Airbnb, and then he's coming back at 1:45 in the morning asking to sleep at the apartment in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And it was like every day I didn't know what it was going to be. And so finally in November, I just called him when he was out for travel. And I was just like, where's your head at? And he just said, I don't see us being compatible long term. Right. And at that point we had a blow up, a pretty big blow up fight. And he said some pretty hurtful things. Mm-hmm. And so at that point I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I packed. We happened to be in executive housing at the, mm-hmm, time because we were building a house in Atlanta.
Oh, boy.
I know. Yeah. So in executive, like, the utensils weren't ours. The appliances weren't ours. Right. All I had to do was pack up my clothes, my books, my dog, and packed it into my vehicle and drove about 8 hours to my parents' place in, my mom and my stepdad's place in Sarasota.
Yeah.
And so I arrived about mid-November, and from mid-November to February, one might think, oh, okay, the red light, green light would have stopped. No, it kept going.
Yeah.
We would be intimate over FaceTime. We would have like hours long conversation where, he would ask me, what do you think needs to be changed? And I would come up with these reasons or things that I would like to see him change and improve upon, his health, our hobbies, things like that. And then he would come back to me with financial things.
Yeah.
Trying to coerce me into signing a postnuptial agreement.
Yeah.
When I was back in Atlanta in December, I stayed at an Airbnb, and he came over to the Airbnb and he stayed that night. And so it was still,
it's confusing.
It was so confusing. Yeah. And still red light, green light.
Yeah.
So I had talked to a lawyer, and she was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Melissa Davis of Buckhead Family Law, love her. And she was like, Abby, I'm not in the business of pushing people to get divorced, but there is a strategic advantage to filing first. And so finally, in February of 2023, early February 2023, I was back in Atlanta, and he and I had dinner, and he was like, no, really, this is it. And I'm like, really? Because just 3 weeks ago, you sent me a text at 11 o'clock on January 18th saying, you're sorry, you fucked everything up, could I ever forgive you? And yeah, I could have it, you know?
Right.
But for whatever reason, at that dinner in February, I believed him this time.
Yeah.
And so I filed February 10th, I think, of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And so from February, March, April, May, June, July, I call that period ignorant bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not bliss. Yeah. Bliss is the wrong word. Maybe just ignorance.
Right.
Because as I was telling people about what was going on, they were just like, Abby, that you don't just leave a marriage. They were just like, are you sure there's not somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
And he was the most loyal person I knew. Like, that was one of his greatest qualities,
right,
was how loyal he was. He even put up boundaries in our relationship early on when we were dating,
mm-hmm,
about, like, what's okay, what's not okay, as far as relationships, you know, platonic relationships with the opposite sex. And I appreciated that. That was the first time I kind of really had pretty structured boundaries in place. And it did help me to trust him inherently.
Right.
I did quite a bit of traveling with my job, and I never worried because of these boundaries that we had in place. And so when they were, I just couldn't fathom that that could possibly be it, because it was so outside of his, what I knew to be his character.
Right.
But then I got curious.
Yeah.
And things just didn't add up. Because, you know, when you're in it, you're in, like, fight or flight.
Right.
You're not even really thinking. Like, it, some days are just about survival.
Yeah.
So I'm a woman of faith. And so for whatever reason, I call it God's grace or mercy, I don't know in the timing of when I found things out. But I happened to be back in Arkansas visiting a friend, my best friend. And we just got curious together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were at this, like, co-working space. And I pulled cell phone records, and you being in marketing or business, you'll appreciate this. I started to do pivot tables. I compiled all the data, and I started to do pivot tables, and I laid it out by month over the course of like 18 months for as much cell phone data as I could get. And I took a step back after I had compiled it all.
Right.
I took a step back and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. There's a pattern.
There's somebody else.
Yeah.
And so I had a hunch of who I thought it might be. And so my best friend, who is a master sleuther,
right,
I'm like, you need to be a detective here. She starts looking and she's like, yep, that's her number.
Yeah.
And so it became very clear that when you, they were work colleagues.
Yeah.
So he met her at Napa.
Yeah.
She was also another executive at Napa.
Yeah.
And when you call someone every single day on the way to work and every single day on the way home from work, that's a red flag.
Right.
There's not that much business to talk about.
Yeah.
And then I would see a string of days where there, like 3, 4, 5 days where there wouldn't be any calls between them. I'm like, that's odd. And
my lawyer together.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly my lawyer was like, well, they're together.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit.
Right.
And then I went back to credit card statements where maybe he said was traveling, and it was like, huh, I don't remember you saying you were going to Miami or Nashville or Savannah.
Yeah.
And so they were together.
Yeah.
And so I found that out 2 weeks before our scheduled mediation.
Uh-huh.
And so it's safe to say we did not settle in that first mediation. And so that then kicked off a formal discovery process. So in the formal, because everything before that was just informal, which is just about like finances, you know? And then that kicked off a formal discovery, which asks you every question under the sun.
Yeah.
And in the extramarital affair section, he pleaded the fifth. And in Georgia, infidelity is a crime.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's not a no-fault divorced.
I don't know about that,
yeah.
But I know because my lawyer and I talked about this. I was like, okay, it's a crime. I'm like, can we arrest him?
Yeah. She's like, you have to arrest half the state.
Yeah. She was like, it's kind of like a speeding ticket, but here's what it allows us to do by pleading the fifth in the formal discovery document, whatever that's called. She's like, we get to interpret that as a yes.
Right.
So, we then moved into depositions where I was deposed, he was deposed, she was deposed.
Boy, you got it all.
I got it all. Yeah.
I did not get any, but it's interesting the way, yeah. Did that make you feel better? Kind of,
you know,
knowing what happened?
I had a roller coaster of feelings. Up until I knew about the affair, I was beating myself up.
Right.
Like, how I ruined our marriage. What? I feel like I'm a good wife. Like, what? And then finding out about the affair, it was feelings of, oh, no, I'm not carrying this around. This is your bullshit.
Right.
This is because it's easier for you to have an affair with someone than it is to have a conversation with your wife. That's, you're a coward.
Yeah.
So I had those feelings. And then I was getting advice from friends and support people, like, just get it over as fast as you can. Just get it done quickly. I can understand where that advice is coming from, because through the process, you are kind of picking at a scab. I get it. But for me, getting the information in the deposition was a sense of relief.
Yeah.
And while I don't believe they were entirely truthful in the depositions, having that information was helpful.
Yeah.
And while you're in there, you're kind of, I almost felt like a paralegal.
Yeah.
Because we combed through, they had to provide text messages and all the personal calendars. I mean, do not have an affair. Do not have one in Georgia.
In Georgia, yeah.
Like,
I don't know
your
that we have
entire
that. Yeah.
life will be uprooted.
Yeah.
So I had to me and my lawyer combed through all of this information, because in the deposition, it's kind of, you're kind of gathering information so that you can maybe catch them in a lie if you have to go to trial.
Right.
And so I wanted my lawyer to be like, catch him. He's lying about that. Get it. And she had to temper me and be like,
you just want to lead him gently. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, when do you play the cards and when you don't?
Right.
But I mean, her first question out of the gate was, when was the first time you and Brooke had sex?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the first question out of the gate.
Right.
And I found the process to be oddly therapeutic. So we went through all that, and then we came to, we had a second arbitration, which then we landed on kind of final settlement agreement. We had some, we couldn't align on some final things. And so then we had to finally settle in arbitration on a couple of items. So, but we were pretty close to coming to trial. And in Georgia, Georgia and Texas are the only two states in the U.S. where a jury can preside over your divorce. So it got pretty close to that point. At the end of the day, I just kind of had to ask myself, you know, and my lawyer was very good. She was just like, Abby, you don't, it's a crapshoot with a jury trial, especially given the county that we're in Atlanta. You know, if you were my sister, she was like, I would tell you to take this deal. It would have made a great ending to the book, though.
Oh, gosh. I can't even imagine that. It sounds so different from California or what I think would happen. I've never heard of a jury.
So that's my story. The first couple podcasts will be like the full version of that,
right?
Because this time I was just keeping a journal. I didn't have any friends or family in Atlanta. I had a cousin who I would call every day, a best friend I would call every other day that helped me get through it. But the journal, I got a 300-page journal that I kept, that documented everything. But the intent of a podcast is to share these types of stories, put them out into the world, for both men and women. And because I remember feeling like, you know, the only person in the world that's going through this,
right?
You know, you're not, but people just don't talk about it.
People don't talk about it, or people want you to get over it. I mean, that's what I found. Like, my married friends gave me a certain amount of time, but then they figure a couple years later you'll be over it. And the people who've gone through it understand it's like a life change. I mean, you don't ever, I don't know that you ever get over it, especially, you know, when I have my kids and grandkids coming, you know, there's still pain associated with it for years, and there's a shelf life. People have empathy, and then they want you to move on.
That's a great point.
So
we'll get into that. But before we do, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Hi, my name is Leslie, and I am 56 years old. I got divorced. I was just thinking it will be 10 years in January. I think everybody gets divorced in January for tax reasons, but it'll be 10 years that I've been divorced in January. You want me to go right into it?
Your divorce is 10 years old.
Yes, it is.
56 years young.
Yes.
You look great, by the way.
Thank you.
You and I just even met less than 48 hours ago.
Correct.
Why on earth would you agree to sit down with a stranger and talk through this deeply painful chapter of your life, and then also be open to having strangers listening to it as well?
Yeah, I think there's two reasons. One is a purely selfish one. You know, over the 10 years, I've done a lot of work on myself, and I find like the more times I kind of tell my story or talk to people about it, I get different perspectives, or I get, you know, heal a little bit more. So some of it is for personal reasons, because, you know, as I was thinking about doing this podcast, I started thinking about things and maybe in a little different way. And then the second one is I don't think that people understand divorce unless they've been through it. And I was one of the first of my friends to get married and also one of the first to get divorced. And so it was really lonely at first. People didn't really understand. They were super, very supportive, but I felt like everybody in my life was going in a straight line, like a train track. And I had just gone, you know, my caboose took a left turn and I was watching everybody, you know, and I'm going off in this direction. I don't even know where it's going. So subsequently, I had a lot of friends who have gotten divorced. And I've tried to help them through it and provide my perspective, particularly as I get farther and farther away from it. I think it's helpful. Mm-hmm. It's just something we don't really talk about, you know?
Yeah. To your point, whenever I meet with people and, I don't know, somehow divorce comes up, they always get, like, if you've been through it, you've been through the divorce trenches, you get, like, a special badge. Mm-hmm. In my mind, like, yeah. Oh, you're part of the club.
Right, right. Well, and everybody always says, like, you're better off without him, or they want this, like, happily ever after. And my friends and I always talk about it. It, a lot of times, it's a choice between two bad options. It's like, which one is the least bad? Mm-hmm. You know, and people don't understand. They're like, oh, you must be so much happier. And you're like, well, I wish it had all been different, you yeah. know? And it's just, how do you deal with that and move on from that, you yeah. know?
Especially if you didn't ask for the divorce.
Right, right.
And I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't either. I didn't know I was unhappy in my marriage. Mm-hmm. I had no idea he was unhappy in the marriage.
Right.
Completely blindsided.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you envision this future and it all gets blown up.
Right, right.
So if we rewind the clock, mm-hmm. and if you'll just kind of set the context, the stage for us, maybe how you guys met, what attracted you to each other.
Yeah, yeah. So we met, I was very young, 22. He was 22 as well. I had just moved to San Francisco, and we met through a mutual friend that I went to college with and he went to high school with at a party. We figured out later we had met a couple times before. So, you know, I think timing is everything when you meet people, because we didn't remember each other. But we were pool partners and ended up getting along. And I just felt really safe with him, which is very ironic given the way things turned out. He wasn't like anybody that I'd ever dated. He was very more traditional, like preppy. You know, well-educated, he had a good job. He was very, upfront with me. I was thinking about our first date was on Valentine's Day, and he brought me one yellow rose and one red rose for friendship and for love. And, you know, when he dropped me off, he said, "When can I see you again?" And he was like that at the start. And I think it's easy to forget that or to demonize the whole relationship once you get divorced. But, you know, I don't think there were any super big red flags back then. He came from a very sort of traditional patriarchal family, and my family is a little less traditional, and I kind of like the structure and the expectations that went with that. You know, that sort of came to bite us in the rear later, I think. But it was attractive to me to have a family where there were certain expectations and certain holidays, and you were supposed to show up and go to church and do all this stuff. And I think in me, he maybe saw somebody that wasn't like that. So anyway, we dated for 3 years and got married, lived together, got married, and we were married for 19 years, had 2 kids. Two beautiful kids, which I'm really grateful for. And, you know, looking back, I think when people ask, like, what happened, there are varying degrees. Like, it's like an onion, you know? I was thinking, when people ask me, like, why did you get divorced, it kind of depends on what day it is, mm-hmm. what I say. Because there's sort of an obvious, which is the obvious is probably 9 years into our marriage, we moved to a bigger house. You know, my ex was very stressed financially. I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. He was stressed about me meeting the mortgage, couldn't keep a job. He started drinking a lot more. I think he suffers from depression. And near the end of our marriage, he just lost his job and sort of yard sailed, you know, sort of lost his mind, honestly, for a couple years there. So that's sort of the obvious thing that happened. But if I look back at who we were when we got married, I mean, we were very young. I mean,
how old were you?
We got married at 27, but we met at 22.
Okay.
So I was with him the whole time.
The same for me as
really?
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so I think that that we didn't even know what we wanted. Like, I saw in him what I wanted in our life, which was like the white picket fence and the community and, you know, some of the things that I didn't have, the neighborhood, the sports, the all that. And I think that he did not want that ultimately, and just either didn't have the language or didn't have the internal knowledge to verbalize that. And so I think that was had a lot to do with our divorce. Just different expectations and not even knowing ourselves or what we wanted.
It does kind of sound like a misalignment of values and expectations.
Right.
Which I don't know anyone who
right.
who does a internal values
right.
assessment before they go down the aisle.
Right.
And at
right.
27, like, what, you don't really know what your values are.
Exactly. I think we loved each other. Like, he tried to paint that, like, we never, you know, all this when we got divorced. But I think people do that because it's easier. But as I tell my kid, you know, love is not enough. Love is nowhere near enough. You need to have aligned values, and you need to want to be married.
Yeah.
It's sort of
right.
the key thing. Like,
yeah.
like marriage has to be your goal, and you need to be able to want to do anything to keep the marriage. Mm-hmm. And I sure did. I mean, it's funny. I never, you don't know what your internal values are until you go through something like this.
Yeah.
My parents were married for almost 50 years before my dad passed, and I wouldn't have considered myself traditional in that way, but it's funny how much that was ingrained in me. Like, I would have stayed, you know, you get married and that's it. And it didn't really become clear how deep that was until the marriage got really bad and I was still desperate to keep it. I mean, desperate.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
That eager to please, easy to please, desperate feeling.
Yeah.
So you took us through kind of the obvious reasons, the less obvious reasons. How eventually did divorce come into the vocabulary?
Yeah, I mean, our marriage was kind of a slow, long, lingering death. And I think I was in such denial. I look back on it and I want to shake the person I was and tell her to, like, just look at what's happening. I mean, I think he wanted out of the marriage and didn't want to be the bad guy, didn't want to break up the family. And so that he ended up drinking more and more and more, lying, you know, financial lying, you know. He had credit cards I didn't know about, stuff like that. And so all these secrets or these shoes were dropping, and I was so desperate to keep it all together that, you know, I think you mentioned I was in fight or flight for years, absolute years. You know, he would get really upset and angry, and I would do anything, placate, you know, walk on eggshells to keep the peace. And because I think I subconsciously knew that he wanted out, and I just was desperate to keep my family together. Mm-hmm. I remember about 5 years before we got divorced, he we were at a therapist. We tried therapy on and off, but we never lasted more than like a couple of times. I think we both just didn't want to get into the deep stuff. And he wanted to leave. And I don't even know if he used the word divorce. I don't even know if we actually used the word divorce. It was like breakup. You know, I don't know. It's like everything we did, we danced around stuff. Mm-hmm. We and that's what I would go back and change, is I would be much more direct. Mm-hmm.
What would take us through that scenario? If you could, this woman that you are today, go back and... What's the pep talk, I guess, that you would give yourself?
That I would give myself? Well, we were at the therapist, and Mark said he wanted to leave. I remember it was the holidays. It was before Thanksgiving. And I remember, like, crying and begging. Mm-hmm. I was begging him to stay. And he said at the end, I guess we can try and make it work. And... I was grateful for that. Mm. I mean, and so looking back, I'm like, you should not have to beg somebody to stay with you. Here's the thing though, like I would, if I had to do it all over again, I would let him leave. But then I would not have gotten to spend time with my kids. You know, part of it was we had young kids, or not young kids, they were like elementary school, middle school. And I would lose them half the time too. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that is a consideration,
right?
With kids, I know women who aren't in great marriages right now, and it's the kids that is kind of the glue at the moment
that holds them together. Yeah, and I remember like promising my son, my oldest son, in the bathroom after a fight with my ex. He said, are you going to get divorced? And I promised him we wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of stuck with me. You know, you don't want to let your kids down, or especially if you promised them something. So looking back, we beat that horse. I mean, it was a long, painful limp to the finish line. It was like a long, painful limp. And meanwhile, he just kept drinking more and more. It got worse and worse and worse. And I think we would have saved our, you know, looking back at that time, if we had cut it off there, at least we would have saved, you know, our sanity probably, and maybe some of our dignity.
Mm-hmm. Just a reframe. It sounds like you exhausted every single option. And it just, you know, you tried everything, it sounds like.
I think we tried everything, but I mean, I think we could have done a little deeper communication. I think we, you know, got married so young. I don't think either one of us are, you know, our families of origin were not great communicators. We didn't talk about important things. And I think one of the things that when we got married, we didn't talk about important things like, you know, financial of values, who was, you know, whether I was going to stay home with the kids forever or whether it was going to be for a little while. Like, we didn't have any of those conversations. So we just kind of, you know, as things hit, would deal with them, and then found out that we were more misaligned than I thought, you know. And I underestimated his anxiety and stress, and I think he had a lot more anxiety that he was dealing with than I understood, and I was so busy raising the kids, I didn't have a whole lot of empathy for it either.
Yeah.
So that's my part in it, you know.
I mean, you're exhausted.
Yeah.
You're in survival mode, but you're a mom, and you know, that's a full-time job right there.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. So it got really, really bad. And I have a lot of frog analogies for some reason, but it's like a frog on a pot and on the stove, you know, in a pot of water. I don't know why there would be a frog there, but but the heat is turned up so gradually that eventually the water's boiling and the frog doesn't realize because it's just so gradual. Mm-hmm. And so I look back at that and I'm like, oh, like anybody from the outside would have seen, you know, like he would, you know, disappear. We would get in arguments like all the time. My eyes were so swollen that I would keep like spoons in the freezer and put them on my eyes in the morning. Like that was a routine, you know, that's not normal, you know? And nobody knew. I lived in a community where everybody kind of kept a facade on, and I kept it on too, because I was so desperate not to have things fall apart. So that was part of it too, was keeping appearances up, you know? So we were like, I felt like we were keeping appearances up, and then frantically, like inside the house, it was just, it was a train wreck, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're spinning a lot of plates in this period of time. How did divorce actually come up and like the process actually kickstart?
Yeah, so he had lost his job and was on severance. And at that point, I thought he was really struggling. And so I thought it would be a good thing. He would have time to like, I kept waiting for something to change. Like I thought maybe he would, you know, get in shape, feel better about himself, get a job that he really wanted. And during the whole time he was off, he did not. He would still just disappear, you know, be gone. I wouldn't be able to find him. And then we got into an argument one time, and it wasn't unusual, and he left, and he said, you know, I'm leaving, and he didn't come back. And I thought, you know, every time before I had begged or, you know, compromised or done something to make sure that he would come back. And I finally remember this time just being like, okay, you can go. And then I think that's all he really needed, like, was the permission, I think. And so he didn't come back. He moved into his dad's club in the city, and he filed for divorce like almost immediately. There's a 6-month waiting period in California, and so it literally, like 6 months later, it was done. It was like for a very long, slow death of the marriage, and then the wrapping it up was very quick.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And the funny thing is I was in such denial still. I did not think, it didn't even occur to me that I would ever be divorced, which is such a bizarre thing to say. But looking back, I still, like until the papers were filed, I still did not really believe that it was happening. Yeah. So.
What did you need to do or get in order to kind of position and protect yourself during the divorce?
Yeah, I wish that I had done more at the time when we got divorced through mediation. And it was a pretty quick process. I did see a lawyer on the side. I had a dear friend take me and bring cash so I could, you know, pay for it in cash. And that's something that if I had to do it all over again, I would have had, you know, access to my own money for that kind of thing. Just to kind of get my, you know, make sure that the mediation was fair. But there was so much lying and financial. He had credit cards that I still to this day don't know how high they were. I think they were pretty high. And so as part of the agreement, we agreed that he would take that debt and I would take, you know, and split everything. So I think in retrospect, I should have spent more time, you know, legally making sure that I got you know, I think I probably got shorted just on the thing, but then everybody was telling me, you know, people who'd been through it before, I'd seen, you know, people going through lawyers. I didn't want to get in this long drawn out fight. You know, I didn't want this to sort of drag on for years and years and years. And at the time he was unemployed and I was working part time. Mm-hmm. And so legally in the state of California, I would have had to pay him support. Luckily he did not ask for that, but it just, that was, you know, a shock coming from, he made a very good living, you know, and I was a stay-at-home mom. And then I worked part-time. Thank God I went back to work part-time, but I was still working part-time when we got divorced, not making enough to live on. Mm-hmm. So it was a very scary time. Yeah. Very, very scary.
What, I'm just thinking of kind of my own network, yeah. And I know people that are in a similar situation that you were in.
Right.
What were your biggest fears during that time?
I think my biggest fear was, how am I going to support myself? I was 47 years old, working part-time, you know, and I had a gap in my resume of about 8 years. I knew that we were going to have to sell the house, so I was going to have to, you know, downsize. Oh, you know, what does that mean? And so it was really, luckily the agency I was working for immediately said they would take me on full time. Mm-hmm. And this is where the grace of people came in, like just amazing people. So I was able to at least support myself via that, which was good. But yeah, it was a lot of financial fear on top of all the grief and devastation, you know, to boot. So it was a really scary time. And at that same year, 2015, I got divorced. My sister got divorced, and my dad died 6 months later. Gosh. So some of that, I mean, that year was sort of a fog of just trying to get through. It was a terrible
one year. Divorce is enough to feel like you're in survival mode. But yeah. To layer on those other two as well.
Yeah, it was a really hard year. So part of it was just trying to survive and just put one foot in front of the other, mm-hmm. you know, for all three of us, you know, so.
And I want to get into, like, how did you make it through those ultra tough days?
Yeah. So I had a very great set of women friends, you know, neighbors, people that were parents of my kids' friends, and they all, you know, rallied around me amazingly. I had to sell the house, and my ex disappeared and didn't help with the sale of the house. So my neighbor gave me her furniture to stage it. You know, my realtor was a very good friend of mine, and she and her husband came with a pickup truck and moved stuff. And some of that was beautiful, because I don't know, I think in some, or at least in my experience, I was keeping things so hidden. I was not telling people what was happening. And there was a bit of freedom in being truthful, you know, and just being honest and not having to keep track of what I was covering up where. So that was freeing. And then watching my friends come and help was just amazing. So that helped a lot. Yoga helped a lot. I got into yoga.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask what, how you maintained or prioritized your health and wellness during this time.
Yeah. So I started doing yoga at this time. And that was a lifesaver. I mean, I still do it a couple times a week now. Not only for physical, but, just to be in my body and get out of my head, mental, It was fabulous. I took a teacher training course for yoga as well to try and deepen my practice. And that really helped, you know, ground myself. Mm-hmm. I also started doing things that I had sort of given up, like, not given up, but hobbies like paddleboarding. I really spent more time doing that, mm-hmm. Especially because I didn't have my kids half the time. So, I mean, it was terribly sad not to have my kids, but it also gave me some time to sort of explore hobbies and do things that I hadn't done for years. So, you know, now that I'm in San Diego, I paddleboard every weekend. So that's something that I've kept doing, but sort of connecting back with the person I was before I got married and the things that I liked to do before then, or the things that made me happy, was really important.
Yeah. Yeah. You do have kind of the gift of time, yeah. I guess,
yeah.
You know, post-divorce.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about books or articles, songs, affirmations? What spoke to you during this time?
Yeah, I read a book. My sister actually gave it to me, The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a stoicism. It's about stoicism. And I mean, I don't profess to know everything about stoicism, but a lot of it is just very pragmatic. You know, if... Does what's happened to you prevent you from being a good person, being honest, being loyal, being, you know, and kind of control the stuff you can and let go of the stuff that you can't control. Mm-hmm. And I read that book. I mean, it was highlighted and mm-hmm. dog-eared, and I've given it to other people who have gotten divorced. For some reason, that really, really spoke to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that note with us.
Yeah, yeah.
So... Can you maybe, we kind of went off a bit of a tangent
right.
there from the storyline. Can you kind of complete the story for us?
With the divorce?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my ex-husband, we separated and things got even worse after we separated for him in terms of drinking. So there were some really kind of awful years after we got divorced as well. Luckily he got sober about, 6-7 years ago, which is helpful. And, I ended up getting sober 5 years ago as well. And that's been part of my, part of our story. Is probably a different podcast, but so that was, I don't know, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but there was grief and heartache after the divorce as well, because I was really worried about him and worried about my kids being with him. Luckily it ended up having a positive, I wouldn't even say ending, but somewhat of a positive ending, as he's a good father to them now. But there were some rough years for all of us, I think. We got divorced in 2015. We had to stay in the same, my kids were going into high school. So what happened was he moved into a condo area in their school district, and I had to sell the house and I moved into the same condo area. It was good for the kids because they were like close, so they could just, it was like, you know, 4 or 5 blocks, they could go back and forth from house to house. And it was the best for the situation, but it was not super healthy for me, which is why I got out of there.
Yeah.
My ex had a girlfriend immediately, or perhaps there was a bit of overlap, and she, you know, I would sometimes have to follow her to the grocery store in the street, so it was rough.
Yeah.
That part.
Right.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons I moved out of that area. I was sorry to, you know, I didn't want to leave my support network, but it just, you know, it served its purpose, but it wasn't healthy for me to be there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how was it when you moved to your own place, you know, with no possible interaction, or less, I guess, less. Possible interaction.
You know, it was really freeing to have my own place. I had not realized how much I was walking on eggshells in my house, with the fighting and just never knowing what mood he was going to be in. So when I got my own place, I had a party with girlfriends, which was nice. It was like a statement. I really did not want to be the sad, bitter divorced person. I didn't want my kids to see that. So sometimes I faked it till I made it, or, you know, but I didn't want, there were so many years of pain. I didn't want to have more years of pain. Mm. And so, yeah, so my place, it was great. I got to put whatever I wanted on the walls, got to decorate it. I gave all of my friends who helped me move house keys and said, you're welcome anytime, just let yourself in. And yeah, it was, and I, you know, I said it was going to be a sanctuary for my kids, like no fighting, no, we're going to be honest and kind and loving to each other. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like you had a pretty clear vision of what you wanted that next chapter in actual physical space to be and not be.
Yeah. I really wanted a sense of peace and calm and, no anxiety, you know, even if things are stressful or we have to figure things out, we can figure things out. And I think that's where the book helped as well, because there were so many years where I was just felt like a ping pong ball pivoting between panicked emergencies that weren't even really emergencies, you know. So I didn't want that to be my new place. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked earlier about values.
Yeah.
And one of those values, it sounds like, that you carried into this chapter was peace, communication, love, support, kindness. What other values crystallized for you as a result of going through this?
I think honesty is a big one. One of the biggest gifts I think I've gotten is that I'm very honest now with what's going on in my life. You know, trying to keep that facade up is exhausting sometimes. And it is even hard to connect as friends if you have that facade up too. So I think my friendships with women have gotten much deeper and richer. And I'm just honest. You know, we're all just human. And so that's been something that's been really a gift, a real gift. Yeah.
There's a Brené Brown quote that says, vulnerability is the first thing you want to see in others, but the last thing you want to show yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would echo that. It's like when I meet people and somehow our histories come up, and let's say we both have been through a divorce, it like takes this new relationship to a deeper level,
right,
than it otherwise would have. And even my existing friendships, I leaned on them so hard during this period of time that, right, they're deeper than they otherwise would have been as well.
Yeah. And I find myself drawn to people these days who have had their life, something in their life, not go the way that they wanted to. I have, you know, I find those people much more interesting, and much more real, you know. So those are the kinds of people that I seek to spend time with now, which is sort of different than I was, you know, 20 years ago.
We talked a little bit about fear, and there's quite a bit of fear sprinkled out your story.
Right.
What were some of those biggest fears that you've now overcome?
Yeah, so I think I talked about it, but I think it bears talking about again, especially for women and women who stay at home. The financial fear is huge. You know, women, I think, at the short end of the divorce, particularly if you have children, So there was the fear of like Social Security. Am I going to still get Social Security? You know, his earning power, even if he was laid off, I was out of work. My earning power is nowhere near what his is. His parents had far more financial resources than mine. So there were all these fears. My kids were going into high school and we're going to have to go to college. You know, luckily, thank God, my dad had set up, 529s for them, or that would have been, I don't know, the kids would have probably had to take out loans. But there's all these things when you think your life is going a certain trajectory and then it changes. The financial fear was huge for me because, like I said, I was partially employed and he was unemployed when we got divorced. And then sort of the fear of being alone, I had a house full of kids or people running in and out from the neighborhood. And then it got very, very quiet, especially when my kids were not with me. And I remember sitting on the couch thinking, what if I choke? I hadn't eaten a meal by myself for a really long time. What if I choke and die on the salad? When will somebody find my body? I mean, I think people think of that. And it didn't happen. And it still hasn't happened. It's been 10 years. I still have not. And now I eat alone all the time. I will go to a restaurant by myself like that. Like, I'm not afraid. And I actually enjoy being my solitude now. So so there's that. I think there's also the fear of being pitied that I... I've talked about this with friends of mine that our generation did not have the view of the generation before us was that you were not whole unless you had a man, so anybody like Aunt Susie who came to Thanksgiving who was not married was sort of looked at with pity, right? That's sort of the viewpoint that I got growing up, is that if you weren't married, doesn't matter if it was happy, you were less than, or you were just included. Let's include poor old Aunt Susie. And so there was a fear when I got divorced that would be my story, that people would feel bad for me. And I think some of my married friends, they wanted me to find somebody and live happily ever after. I think that was still what they wanted. But it's taken 10 years and I'm happy alone. I mean, I have somebody that I'm dating, a boyfriend, but I don't want to live with somebody else. I don't want to get married again. And I think we need to have female role models in particular of people who are alone and they're just fine and they're whole being alone. That needs to be the message to this next generation, is you don't need to partner up. Because I think that leads to a lot of bad partnerships, You don't need to partner up to be happy, to be whole, to have a lot to offer to the world.
Mm. Well, just hearing you say that is reassuring to me.
Yeah.
the aloneness and the doing things alone for me was one of the biggest fears had as well.
Yeah.
And then I read something, probably on Instagram, and it was something like, no one's watching you. Like, we are so self-involved mm-hmm. with our own stories and our own perception that no one is watching and thinking, oh, look at the poor girl at the bar eating dinner by herself.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the poor girl at the comedy show by herself.
Yeah.
Like, no one is thinking that.
Right.
So
right.
Once I finally realized, okay, no one's watching me, it was freeing.
Yeah.
To use your words.
Yeah, and I really enjoy, like, I can eat what I want when I want to. I don't have to ask anybody. My married friends will be like, oh, let me check with my husband if I can do that weekend. And I'm like, I don't gotta check with anybody. I can buy what I want. Nobody's looking. So there are freeing, with all the grief and the change, there are moments where you're like, this is... if you can embrace it or get to the point where you can embrace it. And it took years. It did take years to get to where I'm at now. But it's not bad.
when I tell others my little elevator pitch, I guess, is I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want, with whomever I want.
Right.
People are like, oh, that doesn't seem so bad.
Yeah. I'm always like, you can make out with a stranger on the dance floor. Yes. When's the last time you got to do that? Yeah.
So, you know, happy 10-year anniversary,
thank you.
I guess. If you could go back and have a conversation with yourself, this new you, with the you that was in survival, fight or flight on those days, what would this you tell that you?
I think first I would say that that's no way to live. You don't deserve to live that way. And that you will figure it out. You will be okay. The kids will be okay.
Can you say more about that, the kids part?
Yeah, so one of the reasons I think I did not want to get divorced was I did not want my family to break up. I mean, one of my biggest things, it still gets me today, is the, you know, someday I may have grandkids, and not to go see my grandkids with their grandfather, their biological grandfather, is just, to me, that's a loss. You know, divorce is filled with a lot of loss of expectations or perceptions or the way you thought. And to me, that's something that still bothers me. You know, so I think that kept me married for longer than I probably should have been married. Because the reality is, I mean, my kids may never have kids. You know, we could have, you know, I could still be married and we could hate each other and go visit the grandkids. You know, there's all these things. And my kids have learned, I think, through this, that life doesn't end up the way that you think it's going to. And it's not an easy lesson. It wasn't an easy lesson for them. And I'm have mixed feelings about whether I'm glad that they had to go through it. But they learned at a young age that best laid plans, and that things don't turn out the way that you think they will. And I think that will give them good skills when they make their decisions. I hope it does, right? I hope that they make decisions based on what makes them happy now. And if it's not making them happy now, they make a different decision, rather than, you know, banking on this future vision that may not ever come through.
Yeah.
So, you know, I ideally, you know, people don't get divorced, or, you know, it's not like I want, but I think my kids have learned a lot from it. They've gotten a lot stronger, for sure. Mm-hmm. And they've learned how to overcome adversity a lot more. Mm-hmm. So I am glad for that, because the one thing I do know is their lives are not going to go the way that either I want them to or they want them to. Not exactly, right? But to embrace, you know, the left turns that may end them up in a totally different place. So
that's probably the one guarantee that we all have in life.
Right, right, yeah.
How do you adapt and show up when that happens?
Right, right. And that's a choice, right? And that's the choice you have. Do you live in the past or live with regrets, or do you move forward and say, you know, these are the cards. These are the cards I have. You know, this is it. So I either play the heck out of these cards or, I mean, that's really all the only choice you have, right?
You probably had to face a choice around forgiveness. And maybe you've forgiven, maybe you haven't. I think forgiveness is a journey as well each of us. What does that look like for you, that journey of forgiveness?
Yeah. I think it changes. I don't think it's a straight line. Like I said before, I think it depending on the day that you talk to me, you might get a different answer. In terms of how I view whether I've forgiven my ex or forgiven myself is another thing. So I think it is a journey. I think I have come to a place where I have kind of looked, you know, 10 years, I'm still kind of looking back and learning what my part in the divorce or in the choice that I made of who to marry and the choices I made along the way. And that helps for me is to look at where I'm responsible, not just where he's responsible. Because I think it was easy when we first got divorced to have him be the bad guy and I was the good guy. I mean, that was the narrative that I clung to, and it was pretty easy because he was a pretty spectacular yard sale. So everybody in the community sort of bought that narrative. But as the years have gone by, I've done more work on myself, and I realize, you know, where I've made choices or, you know, again, not made, you know, put the blinders on and decided not to do anything where I own that. And that helps me for some reason with forgiveness, because I can only change me. And that's really the one thing that I have learned is you cannot change other people. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A friend shared a quote with me, and I think she shared it pre-divorce, but it came to life and I like really got it in the middle and post-divorce. But she said, when people show you who they really are, you believe them.
Right. Right. And I was a master at like pounding square pegs into round holes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just hammered that. And so I don't do that anymore. You know, when I date people now, it's like, this is the person they are. You either accept it or you don't. You know, that's it.
Yeah. And you also show up as, this is the person I am.
Exactly.
Either accept it or not.
Exactly. And if they don't, again, I'm at a point where it's like, I'm not going to compromise. It's hard fought to figure out who you are, especially when you're, you know, in your 50s and you're figuring out stuff that you should have done when you're in your 20s. And so I'm not going to start compromising or, you know, I don't need to at this age. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
So what do you want people to take away from this conversation and hearing your story?
I think since I am 10 years in, what I would like women who maybe are going through, you know, still deep in the pain of it, to take away is that there are blessings that will come. And there's also insight that you will understand years down the road if you keep working on yourself. And the more that you work on yourself and can look at things and look at them from a new perspective, the more freeing it is, and the more you grow, and the more, I don't know, the happier that you'll be.
Yeah. One of my questions is, you know, what gifts or opportunities did your divorce bring you? And you mentioned blessings and insights.
Blessings and insights, and, you know, work too, which is weird. I was thinking about it, and I can be a little jealous of the days when I was a stay-at-home mom or didn't have to support myself. But there's also a pride now with working and supporting myself. And if I'm, you know, being positive about it, the opportunity for me to keep learning and to work with a lot of young people and learn from them has been valuable as well, you know. I think I would have been, had I kept on the trajectory that I was on, I may have been gotten a little stagnant or, you know, closed-minded, or, you know, I would certainly be a different person than I am now. Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I don't know, but I would guess more empathetic too.
More empathetic, for sure. I mean, I was in a bubble before, lived in a bubble, and now I have much more empathy and much more, and again, in a weird way, more empathy for my ex-husband, for the stress he was under, for supporting us, you know. So I I was able to apologize to him for that part, for not understanding years after we got divorced. And again, I, you know, did not necessarily get the apology back that I wanted, but that's all I have control over, right? Is my part. So,
yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
You look amazing and look like you're well past survival. And now, you know, you're thriving. So
it depends on the day. But yeah, thanks, Abby. Yeah. This has been really great.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. It will resonate. It definitely resonated with me. I know it will resonate with our listeners as well.
So. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.